Why is it that with sparkling water, I'm always playing guessing games with what flavor I'm drinking? Is it citrus? Is it aluminum can flavored? Not sure. Sparkling ice, though, they really mean flavor. Like in-your-face flavor. Orange mango, black raspberry. Don't even get me started on the strawberry lemonade. Kiwi strawberry slid right into my taste buds' DMs last night and let them know who's boss. No subtleties there and no sugar either. But it does have vitamins and antioxidants. Find sparkling ice at a major grocery store or club retailer near you. Sparkling ice. Anything but subtle.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
Welcome to another Mother Runner. This is Sarah Bowen Shea. This is episode number 301, and it is our second best of show. Looking back on the past 100 episodes, really appreciate all the input that people gave about their favorite moments. And I admit it's a little bit of a vanity project. I want to rehear some of my favorite moments. And oh my gosh, it was so much fun going back and listening to the episodes over again to be like, oh, that's the best moment. No, that's the best moment. No, that's the best moment. So a little bit like, saying which one of your kids is your favorite. You love them all for different reasons. So we're going to kick this show off with one of the biggest stars that we had in the past 100 episodes. And it is episode number 256, Conversation with Running Icon Catherine Switzer. This is KV, as she's often called, and how she was registered when she signed up for the 1967 Boston Marathon. This is her talking about feeling the love and gratitude and how much pressure she felt to finish the 1967 Boston Marathon, where she was the only registered woman in the race. So here you go. So, Catherine, my question to you, do you feel the love and gratitude even today when it seems like women runners are, you know, dominating events, particularly here in the U.S., that we were previously, you know, barred from?
I do. I do feel the love and gratitude. But I'll tell you the truth, you also feel the pressure of responsibility. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are all these people who, you know, you feel are counting on you, as well as them loving you. And you don't want to let them down in any way. And so, for instance, when you're starting a new nonprofit, you really, or any business, or writing a book, you just can't just sit back and relax. You really, and wing it. You need to consider them and want to do the best you can for them. Maybe that's just my overburdened Protestant ethnic background, growing up always being pounded on to do right and keep your nose clean and all that kind of stuff. And certainly I feel enormous pressure about this Boston Marathon. And I feel, you know, sometimes I don't have enough latitude. For instance, anybody can get sick or get hurt right before a race and not be able to finish a run or even start. But I feel like I don't have that choice. And you know what's really interesting is in 67, after Jock Semple attacked me in the race, I turned to my coach and I said, I have to finish this race no matter what, even if I have to finish it on my hands and knees, because if I don't finish it, nobody's going to believe that women can do it and should be allowed to do it. And so I felt that no matter what happened, I had to finish. Well, fortunately, things all went fine and there wasn't any problem. And I just finished the race and it was great. But there was that pressure of constantly, you know, every time I saw a cop out on the course that day, I'll never forget, I thought he was going to arrest me or pull me off the course. Goodness. Wow. So, you know, I guess from age 20, I've had that kind of sense of responsibility. Certainly what I'm going to try to do, and I'd love all of my loving fans out there to salute me with this. After we get through Boston, for better or worse, I really want to kick back and have fun with running for once. And and for instance, the woman who wrote about New York, you know, I won the New York City Marathon, but it was in 1974, and it was before the race was in the streets. So this year, if I'm not injured and I'm well and everything, I plan on running New York for the first time through the streets of New York. And wow. I decided, since I'm training so hard for Boston, I might as well keep on a roll and keep in shape for it. So maybe I will see her out there on the course, and that would be great fun.
And we're just going to keep the celebrities rolling here. This is episode 260, Melissa Clark of New York Times talking running and cooking. And Melissa Clark is one of my idols of one of my other passions other than running, which is cooking. And this is Melissa talking about how to get over dreading dinner and claim it as me time, like running.
People forget because we're pulled in so many directions mm-hmm. and we feel like, oh my gosh, we have to be doing, you know, the same, it's the same exact thing with going for a run. I should be working. I should mm-hmm. be, you know, calling my mother. I should be answering my emails. You know? And you forget, but I think cooking and running, I mean, for me, I embody it because these are the two things. These are my me time. They're my enjoyment. And I claim that running time. I'm like, I am going to run because I eat it for me. It's the same thing with cooking mm-hmm. with the added bonus of it also feeds the other people in my house. Right, but right. cooking, if you just have to get it, you have to remind yourself. I mean, and it's true. It's just a daily reminder. I like this. Remember, this can be therapy. This, mm-hmm. I always say, make your dinner preparation time the best time of your day. You know, mm-hmm. make it either bring the people you love into the kitchen with you so that you can talk to them. You can listen to music together. You can help your kids with their homework. You know, sometimes my husband will read to me. He'll read me the newspaper. Oh. Or get everybody out of the kitchen and take the time as your serenity time and like be in your moment with yourself and have a moment of calm before dinner, like whatever works for you. But just give yourself permission to make it about you.
Yeah, I got to say that I'm glad right. to hear you give the opposite of that, because I forget what show I heard you on, but you were talking about how much you enjoy the time with your family when you're cooking. And I'm like, oh, I'm such a mean mom, because all I think is, could you just leave me alone? I just want to listen to this podcast. I just want to listen to NPR for a little while, not pause it 20 times.
And, exactly. Yeah, yes. Right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. We have a really long, narrow kitchen. So if anybody's in there with you, you're just always playing this little dance, trying to get out of each other's way. So I'm very much a, please leave me alone. Just leave me alone.
Yeah.
And that's feeling waltzing your tonight, please.
Your kitchen is suited for you. That's good.
Yes.
Yeah, no, we have a big open kitchen, so it's easy for, you know, for all of us to be in there at the same time.
Yeah, and you also have one child so that there's not that bickering thing that is just so
delightful.
That
makes a big difference. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes a big difference. So, you know, her big thing is she actually would like us to go away so that she could just sit and read, and read her book. And, you know, we just insist on talking to her. We're so annoying. But you know, she at age 8 is a burgeoning runner. That little kid is fast. So
nice.
Yeah, she runs circles around me, literally, awesome. And loves it. So.
And this is from episode 227, Run Fast, Eat Slow, a chat with cookbook author Elise Kopecky. And Elise, as you know, co-authored that cookbook with none other than New York City Marathon 2017 winner Shalane Flanagan. And this is Elise describing the symptoms of hangry and how runners can combat this all-consuming sensation.
So hangry is a really common, you come back from a run and you need, and you're so hungry and you don't want to have a conversation with anyone. Like you're just focused on getting to the fridge as quick as possible. It's super common. I experienced it as a new mom when I was nursing.
Oh, God, yes.
in there.
Yeah. Even though it was more than a decade ago for me.
And, yeah. You know, oh, gosh.
Three for you. Me. Yeah. And it's like, yeah. Oh, yeah. We remember that feeling. Remember.
Yeah. You're so depleted. Your body needs to recharge. So eating foods that are really nutrient dense and calorie dense and have a perfect balance of fats and carbs and protein, and real food provides that naturally without having to read the label on a package. So a lot of runners suffer from burnout or low energy or just feeling mood swings. And mood swings are often related to not having enough fat in your diet.
Which reminds me, earlier you had mentioned the athletic amenorrhea that you suffered in high school and college, but you were able to combat it by adding more fat to your diet. So tell us a little bit about this condition and why is it so often an issue for female runners?
So athletic amenorrhea is when you don't get your period, and it's really common in runners. I think of runners running at the competitive level, it's like 70% of women suffer from it.
Wow,
young women athletes. And I read like 40, they're estimating 40% of women in general who are runners. And when you're training, your body, to keep your hormones in balance, like fat, you need that fuel. And fat is so important for that.
Okay, okay. One more celeb. Bear with me. This time it's a man. This is episode 265, a chat with Peter Sagal of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. It's our tradition here at Another Mother Runner to have a man, a kind of famous man, on the Father's Day episode. And so this is Peter's description of being 100 yards away from the bomb blasts at the finish line of the 2013 Boston Marathon and the pocket of innocence he was in.
Well, yeah. I mean, what's really weird about it is that by myself, William Greer, the guy I was guiding, and everybody else around us, actually knew less about what had just happened than anybody else on the planet. And by that, I mean, we didn't have our phones. We just run a marathon. We didn't run with our phones. They were making no announcements at the site of what had happened. And even though we were very close to it, we couldn't really see it because, I don't know if you've been to the Boston Marathon finish line, but any major marathon finishing line will conjure the image. The finishing line itself is a big superstructure, and it's surrounded by steel and trellises and scaffolding and signage and camera platforms. And so all of that stuff was between us and the bomb site. Mm-hmm. We didn't see it, although we obviously could hear it. It was quite close. We had no other way of getting information, and we were told to move away as quickly as possible. So, whatever instinct I might have had to go see what the hell that was, because I had never experienced anything like that before, was sort of overwhelmed by my responsibility to take care of this blind guy who I just ran a marathon with. So for the next 10, 15 minutes, while the world looked on with horror at the first images, we were just, doing what you do after a marathon, which is like picking up bananas and getting a medal around our heads and stuff like that. It was sort of this bizarre little pocket of innocence while the rest of the world was going, oh my God, this is horrible. Mm. It wasn't until we got out of the chute and we saw the chaos sort of around us that we realized something really terrible about. Mm-hmm.
Did it seem particularly frightening because you're with someone who couldn't see, who no matter what their vantage point was?
Again, one of the things I'm very, very careful to do whenever I talk about this is ever imply that in any way I had a problem that matched or even approached the problems being experienced by a whole lot of other people that day in that place. So, for example, I had a blind guy and I had to get him out of the chute to our meeting place so he could meet his wife and get his stuff back. That's nothing. Put aside the actual victims, the people who were dealing with life-threatening injuries not 100 yards away. There were about, among the, I don't know how many people, probably more than 1,000 runners who weren't allowed to finish the race. Remember, they blocked it off about a mile short of the finish line, told everybody they had to stop and get off the course. Among those people were about 20 or more blind runners who were with Team of the Vision. They were out there. They didn't have phones. We had no idea, or rather the Josh Warren, the organizer, had no idea where they were. And their guides had no idea where to go. The only meeting place that we had was right off the finish line. That whole area was being cut off. So presumably, so there were, suffice to say, we had it easy. One of the reasons, of course, we had it easy was because, and I've written about this with great admiration, William Greer, even though he was having a really hard day in the course, having to stop a lot, having a lot of cramps, muscular and otherwise, he really gutted out the last mile at my urging, because I was like, man, you can't walk through the last mile of the Boston Marathon. You got to run that. It's the amateur Olympics. You can't walk down Boylston Street. So he did it. He really gutted it out. And by virtue of the fact that he ran that, giving his last measure of devotion, we were safely beyond the bombing site when it went off. If he hadn't run, if he had walked like he really wanted to do, who knows where it would have been. We would have been among the many runners a cutoff on the course, or maybe we would have been a lot closer to the bombing and it would have had a much, much, much more visceral and visual experience of that whole incident than I ended up having. So I owe a lot to his courage. Even though he didn't know that he was saving us, he kind of did.
Wow. Wow. Now we're going to go almost all the way back to the start of the last 100 episodes. This is from episode 208, and this is the 2016 Boston Marathon Report and Training with a Friend. And this is me recounting the section of the Boston Marathon, and my coach, Brianna Bamer, was one of the guests on the show, and it is her wonderful advice about positivity and confidence. I was in the cave of extreme discomfort, probably starting at mile six or seven or eight.
Really?
Because of the heat. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And then by about mile 12, I thought, okay, you know, what can I do to instill confidence in me and a positivity in me? And so I thought, I am going to charge those hills. Mm. I'm just going to charge those hills.
You didn't worry about pooping out?
Getting tired or crapping myself?
Getting tired. not crapping yourself. Losing, you know, your energy.
No, I just feel like, you did better than I did on hill repeats, but I feel I am a strong hill runner. And Bree had reminded me of that from our half marathon we did. Mm-hmm. And I remembered from Boston 2012 in the heat that I passed a boatload of people on those hills. Mm-hmm. And so I just literally leaned into the hills and ran up them.
That's courageous.
Yeah.
Especially feeling bad going into it. You could have pulled back.
Oh, thanks.
But she's not like that, is she, Brie? You've noticed that from her data, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You meaning like she's a good hill runner?
Well, she doesn't back away from the pain.
No. I mean, you know, and particularly what's always great about Sarah is she's got a positive attitude about when she has something hard that she has to do.
Tell me about it.
She just kind of embraces it and like, I'm just going to do it. You know, and it's a great attitude to have, because often we set ourselves up obviously for failure when we decide that it's not possible, but even just the sense of a doubt of something can really change how something feels, you know? Mm-hmm. So if you have a confidence about it, it's going to feel a lot different than if you have this trepidation about it. So.
But it's hard not to have trepidation when you have trepidation.
I know. The more you do it, though, I think what's great about training, and I mean, you guys can probably both speak to this, is that what's great about training is that it should instill confidence that you've done it before. So when you reach a tough patch, a hill, you can reach back in your memory to a run where you've done the same thing and you got through it, and there's at least some confidence that it's not like you can't do it. You know, I think the first time you do anything, there is a trepidation. You know, someone who runs their first marathon and they've never actually run 26 miles, they've maybe run 20 or 21. There's that fear of, can I actually run 26? I've never done that. But once you've done it, there's got to be a confidence inside you that you've been through that before. And you have to use that. I mean, it's such an important thing to draw upon training. I mean, training, Sarah, I'm a broken record when I say this. Race day is just a glorified training day. You know, you do what you've always done. You just happen to have a bunch of people cheering for you and a finish clock at the end. You know, I mean, that's the only difference, right? You know, it's still training. It's what you do every day. So you just have to remember that.
Going forward, just a couple episodes. This one comes from number 214 and is Tales from Back of the Pack Runners. Another kind of party, if you will, of a variety of mother runners. And this is Kelly Keating Caraway telling tales about being slow at the back of the pack. And she's just full of great one-liners summing up a healthy race attitude. Here you go. So, Kelly, we know you recently ran a race with your pal Marianne, who people might remember Marianne as one of the two women who did shared their journey toward their first marathon with us last fall on our website, anothermotherrunner.com. And you gals had a race vehicle on your tail from the sounds of it. So,
on our tail. Yeah, on our tail is kind of an understatement. And that wasn't even the first person that had quote unquote checked up on us. So, I had run with Marianne. She ran with me when I ran the New York City half, and I actually PR'd that race by about a minute. So I was like, oh, Marianne, you're my good luck charm. This was great. This was so much fun. And then, she said, well, let's do it again. You know, we can be, half fanatics or something. Let's sign up for this race. And I thought, oh, I don't know. And as someone who's always a back of the pack runner, I often look to see what are the finishing times for people who have run it in years past to kind of see where I might fall in that pack. And they were 10 to 12 minutes ahead of my best time. And I thought, I don't know if we can do this. And she's like, we'll be fine. Let's just do it. We'll have a great time. And so, and it was a double loop kind of through neighborhoods. And so the good thing was we didn't see a lot of the people who were ahead of us. The bad thing is that's because they were so far ahead of us. We hadn't gotten to the loop by the time they had already passed the loop. So,
oh my goodness.
At one point, you're at about mile 12. You're also turning off to, I think, mile 7. We were turning to mile 7, and volunteers are like, where are you going? What are you doing? Oh. We're like, oh, yeah, we're not done yet. Like, this is where we're supposed to be. So shortly after that, somebody on a bike came by and was like, are you sure you guys okay? We got word that somebody might not be okay. And we're like, nope, we're just really getting our money's worth here. So the bike was with us for probably about a mile-ish or so. And then I guess they got the hint that we weren't going anywhere. And then shortly after that, that's where the police car then escorted us for probably another mile and a half or so. And I don't know, it was a couple hundred feet behind my rear end. So yeah, on my tail is a pretty good description of where he was.
Because
you truly run from the police.
Yeah, exactly. I was running from the law. Literally, yes. Which is interesting because my father is a police officer, so it'll make a great story.
Oh, that is funny.
Oh my goodness. And because I just, sorry to interrupt you, Christine, but Marianne said that, like, you kind of got the stink eye when one of you had to stop to go use the porta potty or something like that.
Yes, and I will throw her right under the bus. That was totally Marianne that had to go to the bathroom. So, and it wasn't even like a race porta potty. Somebody must be redoing their bathroom, and it was a porta potty in someone's driveway.
Nice.
So
Very nice.
Said, well, you know, we have plenty of time. Why don't you just stop? So she like waved to the cop and I was like, sorry. And he sat there looking at us like, okay, so they're really even stopping to take porta potty breaks, knowing that they are, and you know, significantly.
And did you yell out, you're getting double overtime. Be patient.
I didn't to him, but I did say to Marianne when she came back, look, I don't feel sorry. Do you have any idea how much money that guy made to wait for you to come out of the bathroom?
Oh,
like,
exactly.
We're fine.
Right. Oh, my goodness. So when you're out there and you're in the back of the pack, do you feel like you experience the race differently? Maybe your enjoyment level is different than it would be if you were up in the front of the pack or even a mid-packer?
Sometimes I want to say yes. Like, there's been a couple of times I run this, my favorite 10-mile race. It's an all-women's race that they run every October. And I love being in the back of the pack there because you see, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 women ahead of you. And it's just this wave of female athletes, and it's kind of empowering. And I remember last year looking at the woman next to me saying, like, see, the people in the front don't get to see that. So there are times where I think I appreciate it more. There are times when, like I just ran, the Philadelphia Broad Street 10 miler and I was at mile 6 and I saw someone walking through this little square wearing their medal, which meant they had time to finish and take the train back. and I was at mile 6. So there are times like that where I think, are you kidding me? This guy had time to like finish and take the train. And I just passed the halfway point. So times like that are a little frustrating, but most of the time I think, you know what, I'm just lucky to be out here. I'm fortunate that my body lets me do this, and I can't care about how long it takes.
Coming at us from episode number 224, the mental side of running. This was Molly and me talking to Dr. Justin Ross, who is the Denver-based sports psychologist who leads the Perform Like a Mother programs. And it's about Dr. Ross, or J. Rowe, as Dim calls him. This is him talking about overcoming fear and finding out what you're made of.
Well, when I started running, I was training for a half marathon when I just first started out. I got to, it was, and you talked about when you did your first 5 miles and how that was, that felt really hard. When I got to the point where I was doing my first 6 miles, I was so freaking scared, like jumping into a deep ocean full of sharks, kind of scared. I didn't even want to get out of bed in the morning. I wanted to hide under the covers. I wanted to hide under the bed. That was really my feeling. I wanted to just hide from it. And I would dread it all week. The first time I went out on a 6 mile run, not only did I have like 3 bottles of water, my phone, I honestly felt like calling the police to let them know I talked myself down from it, that I was going out on the 6 mile run and they just might want to be aware in case something happened. And then I realized that was ridiculous, and it went okay, but that fear remained. When I got home, it wasn't like, oh great, I did it. It was more like, okay, I escaped death. Now I've got to worry about the next time I got to escape death. Uh-huh. And, I was in a really, really tough mental place. And what ultimately happened is that I hurt my knee and I just had to stop running. Mm. And then I was able to come back to it slower. But have you had athletes that have experienced like a deep-seated fear to the endurance sports?
Oh, absolutely. And it's usually one of two things. Just like you're saying, it's about distance, right? And it doesn't even matter how far the distance is. It's a fear of being able to run that far or swim that far or bike that far, what have you. And the other big mental block is usually about pace, right? If people are trying to run really hard, they can have a mental block about running a certain pace because it's uncomfortable. It can be really hard to push your limits when you're running at the full end of your spectrum. And so that's really common for all of us. I mean, I remember the first time I ran a marathon, I got out of the car to the starting line. My wife dropped me off and I said to her, I don't know if I can do this. And that's there for all of us, despite, having this kind of this background and this knowledge. And yet I think that's the good stuff with this, right? Because you toe the line and then you find out what you're made of and you get through it. And by doing it, you grow a little bit stronger and you realize that maybe that fear, the fear is important.
Oh, I like that. So don't shy away from the fear, embrace the fear. It's important.
Yeah.
And go forward.
Yeah. It's not about being afraid, right? I think a lot of people, when they get to the starting line of whatever race, whether it's a 5K or a marathon or an Ironman or whatever, there's fear involved. And that fear is really important. It's not about not being afraid. It's about having the courage to push yourself through that and to come out on the other side. And, the finish line of races is one of the greatest places because people are so excited and they look at themselves from this new perspective of belief that, the limits are really self-made and they exist more in the mind than they do in the body.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, I definitely feel that too. I feel less afraid to try a lot of different things in my life now. I mean, in dumb things like a sewing project. I'm like, well, what's the worst that could happen now? I ran that 6 miles. So I've got a seam ripper.
Okay, I lied. We have another celebrity, and this is from a recent episode, number 296, and it is beloved Bart Yasso. He talks races and retirement with another new co-host. That was Tish Hamilton. Both of them are Runner's World alumni, and this is all of us talking about slowing down with age and what is an end goal, and the answer might surprise you.
At some point, I figured it out, and if I just tell myself I want to be in this sport, and if I want to continue doing it, I adjust those goals tremendously. I always get to that start and say, okay, the whole goal is to finish, don't hurt yourself, go out and enjoy the day and just get to that finish line. And that's how I ran Bermuda. I wasn't able to run for about 11 weeks, and wow. I was able to start running the beginning of the year. So I got in a couple of days of running and then thought, oh my God, how am I going to do this race? But, I just adjusted the goals and went out there and absolutely enjoyed myself and got to the finish line each day and, had fun. Not the fastest way you want to do it, but, I got there.
Well, as a master's age runner myself, I want to take a side note. I want each of you, Tish, you get, I'm going to ask you a question now, how did you each arrive at the point where your mind was able to accept that you weren't being able to go as fast as you used to? I mean.
Well, for me, it actually, my Lyme disease really set me back. So I really didn't have a choice. I mean, mm-hmm. I knew eventually I was going to slow down. It's inevitable if you do this stuff for 40 years and end up in your 60s. It's inevitable. I was going to slow down. But I think Lyme disease, you know, which I've been affected four times over the last 28 wow. years, has really slowed my running down tremendously. So I have more problems with just trying to train a little bit so I can go out and do races. So it made it a lot easier to the adjustments for me, because I can't train hard, so I obviously can't race hard. So I just literally go out there to be part of the community and get to that finish line. But Tish has kept competitive and kept doing Boston, so hers would be a little bit different.
Well, everybody has a different story, right? So, Bart, look back to you. Like, what was your marathon PR back in the day?
I ran 2:40 at Boston. I didn't break two. Well, I would have broken 2:40 chip time, but it was 2:40 in a couple seconds back in the 80s. But I think I ran better. You know, I ran 2:41 when I was like 44 years old. So I actually thought I ran better in my 40s than I did in my 20s and 30s, because I think I was a little bit smarter in my 40s about training and the things I did. And back in my 20s and 30s, I just raced everything. I didn't care so much about my time. I was just did way too many races, and I was having fun doing it, but I just tried to do too much. And eventually in my 40s, I kind of figured it out a little bit. A little too late, but I figured it out. But yeah.
From episode 276, Coming to Terms with Being Sidelined, this is Dimity recounting her ongoing injury and coming to grips with the end of her almost 25 years of running. I suggest perhaps you grab a tissue or maybe pull down the sleeve of your running shirt, because you might have a few tears coming out. And this clip was suggested by Jana, and I want to read what Jana wrote in an email. She said, "You must include number 276 on favorite show. This podcast where Dimity announces she is breaking up with running was so moving. Her strength and determination to find other outlets that make her and her body happier were breathtaking and inspiring. As runners, we all know the day will probably come when we need to say goodbye, or at the very least, see you later, to this sport that most of us live and breathe and love. Dimity reminds us in this podcast that when that day comes, we will all be okay. There will always be ways to stay involved, to move our bodies, and to find new passions. Always ask, what can I do?" And Jana says, "I'm listening to this podcast again as I type, and it still moves me to tears. I'm so grateful that Dim was so honest and open and willing to share with the tribe. For me, this is a podcast I'll always go back to whenever I need a reminder that when things don't go according to my plans, in running or just in life, you can always forge a new direction, and it will be okay." She says, "Much love to you and Dimity and all my mother runner peeps. Thank you for keeping me moving forward." Here you go, Jana.
Hi. So last Monday, the way we started this conversation, last Monday I went to go see this doctor who I really like here in Denver. He is a spinal specialist, orthopedic doctor, you know, does not do surgery. Mm-hmm. And I actually was referred to him back in 2010 when Run Like a Mother came out. Mm. And I was also not running then. My back hurt so much. And I'm like, yeah. Oh my God, I'm releasing this book about running and I'm going on this book tour and I can't even run. You know, and he's like, Pilates, you've got to try Pilates. And he was the one that got me started on Pilates. Oh, uh-huh. And uh-huh. That worked for a long time and continues to work. And so I go to him and, you know, and he looks at the MRI and, you know, I mean, he walks in and gives me a hug and I'm like, oh, this isn't good. Like, he's never hugged me before. And he knows how much running means to me, you know, professionally and emotionally. And he just said, I'm not going to tell you no, but what I will tell you is, you know, you can do a couple 5Ks with your friends every once in a while. You know, I would approve that. And, you know, my heart just sank. Because that's not what I want to do. You know, I don't want to run a couple 5Ks every once in a while. He's like, and he's just like, listen, your body, you know, you have a very special situation. And I mean, you know, I mean, what I have in my back, I have, you know, degenerative disc disease, which, I mean, that's the other thing that I've done forever is, or not forever, but I have spent so much time on YouTube and Dr. Google and, you know, looking for a magic potion, a silver bullet, an exercise that's I haven't seen before, or somebody's gonna, it's gonna be exactly the one that I need, right?
Yep.
And, you know, so what I have degenerative disc disease, I have a pretty bad bulging disc, like L4, L5, that is just, you know, as flat as a piece of paper, first of all, and it's not supposed to be like that. And it's kind of kicking into my nerve, my spinal column. And then I have this other thing called foraminal stenosis, which is, there's like spinal stenosis, which is the narrowing of your spinal column. And foraminal is like the nerves that shoot out the side of the spine. Mm-hmm. And so stenosis is when the columns narrow and the nerve and the nerves, the size of the nerves don't get smaller. And so what happens is you're trying to, you know, I don't know, you know, shove something.
It'd be like, it'd be like trying to put a cable wire through a
something that's not going to fit. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, it's just going to bite into it. It's going to wear away. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think that, you know, we're pretty sure that's where the hamstring pain is coming from. So it's not my hamstring at all. It's my back. And, so, you know, I just know, I mean, I've been running for 22 years. I mean, I wrote a blog post about it on Thursday. I basically feel like I started my running career at the 96 New York City Marathon. And, and then I got to end it, at the 2016, you know, Twin Cities 10 mile or say, or Twin Cities half or the Philadelphia half marathon. And that's 20 years. And then, and then, you know, 4 years of running on and off and at Colgate for Crew. And that's actually 24 years, not 22. So that's a quarter of a century. Like that doesn't suck. I can't be mad that I can't keep doing something I've been able to do for almost 25 years, you know,
For more than half your life.
Yeah. So, so, you know, he's just, he has his eye on the quality of my life. Mm-hmm. For what I hope is, you know, 90 years or more, right? Yep. And I need to open up my lens so that, widen my lens so that I can see that too. And instead of thinking, I can't run today, hey, what do I want to do when I'm 60? What do I want to do when I'm 70? I want to be able to hike with my grandkids. Like, I want to be like my mom. My mom takes them on hikes. She takes them, you know, she can go kayaking with them. She can go paddleboarding. Mm-hmm. You know, if I keep running, we all know the people, you know, we've all seen them in parks and stuff that can't give it up, right? They have a really bad gait, their arms a little janky, whatever, you know, like it is, and I'm not criticizing them because I know the connection.
What's driving them,
is real. I mean, I get that, you know, but I need to make the decision that I am not going to put myself in that position because that's not going to, that is unhealthier than exercising period in my mind.
Yeah.
So that's the physical part of it. The mental part of it too is, I just had to deliberately take control of the situation.
Yes.
You know, and that is probably, you know, I got to say it's a relief. It's very, very hard. Don't get me wrong, but it's also a huge relief because I have been playing this what if game basically since the Philadelphia, you know, for 10 months now, and it could go on for another 2 years, you know, 6 more weeks of PTA and then I'll be there. Yep. This dry needling session, then I'm going to be there. This person really recommends this chiropractor. He's going to know exactly what's going on. And then he's going to fix me. And it's not fixable. I mean, it is definitely manageable, but you know, the damage is real, you know, and unless I want to go in and have, you know, I mean, you know, the doctor, you know, bless his heart was like, you know, I can give you steroids. I can shoot, you know, we can give you like an epidural kind of thing in your spine and shoot you up there. I can, you know, we can talk about surgery. I mean, 2 PTs have mentioned surgery to me. I'm like, no, no, and no. Like, I'm not putting myself in a position for Band-Aids, which is the steroids or the shooting up my spine and surgery. I mean, all you have to do is Google back surgery to know that that is not a very reliable thing. Yeah. And I'm not, it's not worth it. It's not worth it. So, so, you know, saying, you know, pushing that instead of just being like, I'm going to be on a trail race this spring. I'm going to be able to follow the ultra plan, the Train Like a Mother Club. I'm going to be back to heart rate training. I want to really try the, you know, half Ironman plan and the Train Like a Mother. I mean, I, you know, I drool over these plans. I put them together. I get to be in them, you know, and I want, I mean, like, oh my gosh, I wonder what that would feel like. You know, I wonder how that would feel, that workout. And, you know, I get to still be a really big part of it. And I still get to have adventures, but I just can't keep thinking tomorrow, this thing, because it's just gonna, it's wearing me down. It is totally, you know, if I'm being honest, it's just completely wearing me down. And I can't,
I just can't do it
to myself anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. I just think it's been toying with you. It's, you know, been the cat with the mouse, you know, and it's just
I mean, I keep thinking of it as moth, you know, drawn to like a streetlight. You know, and they fly in, hoping it, and then finally they're gonna die.
Fall to the pavement, exactly. Dead.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not that dramatic, you know. As far I'm not, you know, entertaining really awful thoughts, but it is like I'm like, and I've played this game before, Sarah. That's the thing is, I mean, I know that you have come back from your ankle, and I know that you've come back from plantar fasciitis, but I have come back, and I've come back, and I've come back, and I've come back, and. And I know how hard it is, but this has been the longest time I've been off. And this has been the most severe time I've been off without a clear indication of what's wrong. You know, a stress fracture, put it in a boot, come back slowly, you're going to be okay. You know, like this is just a big, like I described it once as, you know, someone just poured coffee in like the motherboard of my spinal cord. And it's just not ever going to be the same again, you know?
Yeah.
So...
Yeah, I sometimes people ask me, you know, they'll ask how you're doing and how your running's going, stuff like that. And I just, the answer I came up with is, you know, the female operating system is not designed to handle a mainframe as large as yours.
Yeah,
That, you know, there's just, I mean, you are sleek as a racehorse and so muscular and takes, you know, such... good care to even out muscle imbalances and to roll and to, you know, do all these things. It's just, you can't overcome the fact that you are almost 6'4".
Yeah. Yeah, no, I know. I agree. I completely agree. And I, you know, but you know, that's not to say like, I'm going to stop being an athlete. And that's the biggest thing that I want to emphasize here because, you know, the retreat is coming up, the Twin Cities Marathon is coming up and, you know, I am still in this 150%. I'm still in AMR. I'm still in the TLAM club. I am still cheering for everybody. I mean, I have the chills right now because that is what I enjoy the most. I mean, always like having run, but I never, I mean, I enjoy the running. I enjoy trail running a ton, but it's not like, you know, I'm in it because I am a runner first. I am a connector first. I am a cheerleader first. I am a creative person first. Like those things matter to me more than the vehicle that gets me to them.
And Dim, I gotta say the proof of that is what you said when you thought that's not my daughter. I mean, that is your daughter. That is Amelia putting her hand into the middle of the teammates and saying, you know, 1, 2, 3 warriors or whatever
warriors, whatever.
Warriors. Yeah. So that, you know, that I'm like, of course Dimity's daughter is doing that because that's Dimity.
Yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you for saying, sometimes it's hard to see when you're so close to it, but
You know, that big smack on the back, that's the Dimity. You know?
Yeah. That's me. I'll smack any of you, but And I have, we want people to, you know, I wanted to share this first of all, just because it's important that I get it out there because I know that a lot of you guys struggle with injury and I'm not advocating that anybody, you know, stop running who's not ready to stop running, right? Mm-hmm. Like there are a lot of solutions and I could keep running for sure. And I mean, I put in an email that I sent to you guys, Sarah, the AMR team, you know, this is my decision for now. It may not be my final answer. In a year, things might change, but for now, for at least 6, 8, 10 months, I am just saying running is not an option. I'm just not even letting myself go there. And it may be longer. It's probably going to be longer, but that's kind of the bite that I can take right now.
Oh, exactly. Yeah.
But if, you know, so I don't want, I mean, follow my lead if that feels right to you. But if you are injured and you, especially if you have a situation like I do, that's like a mess of knots and nerves and discs and stuff, like it can be figured out. You just have to be ridiculously patient and ridiculously involved in your own self-care.
Okay, and it wouldn't be a best of episode with a clip about found change. This comes from episode number 212, and it is found change, finding money while running. Had a variety of mother runners who find change, who spy and pick it up while they're running. And this was the final guest, conversation with Jennifer Martin, otherwise known as J-Mart. And she's talking about the greater meaning of found change and the quest for it.
This all started because you, Sarah, had started posting all this change. I was like, what is wrong with people in Portland? Do they just empty their pockets constantly? I'm like, this something's wrong. Because I was like, this doesn't happen. Uh-huh. And so you inspired me and you said, well, if you start looking, you'll find it. Uh-huh. And so last year when I think we did the AMR goals in 2015, I made it one of my goals that I was going to find $1. $1. Nice. $1. Okay. So I didn't find my first penny until February of 2015. And you told me, because I think you're the wise one of this whole process. Like you're God. We need to come up with some name for you. You and Molly's good at it too. But I found a penny and you said the floodgate will open. And it did. So I ended the year with $1.98.
Well, all right.
Look at that. You totally surpassed your goal. You almost doubled it.
I think you made more than I did. Found more than I did.
Well, and then my family's like, well, are you going to set a new goal? I'm like, no, I already achieved it. So, no. But, you know, it turned into a whole kind of family thing where, you know, I remember coming back Easter and my husband was like, ha, ha, ha. And he was throwing change out the window saying, I hope you find it. And I'm, you know, so.
That's a cute idea. Did you go back and look for it?
I never found it, you know, and I had another friend, Catherine, throw some money out in her cul-de-sac. I never found that either. So I was like, there must be other people out there. But I kind of feel like that was cheating a little bit. So.
Oh, sure. Oh, exactly.
Because we established rules I have rules. I don't know about everybody else, but, you know, my rule is you have to be in the act of running to for it to count.
That's our rule, too.
Okay.
We have some caveats to that. It can be anything athletic. So if you're riding a bike and you find money,
okay.
Or also, I found money at the place where we do bar when we run there and run home.
Okay.
And I found a penny last week in the cubby where I put my shoes, and Molly goes, yeah, that counts. So
okay. We ran there. I wonder if we drove there if it would count.
No, yeah. I wouldn't. I would definitely wouldn't. Because I do. I have a separate change container for money that my family and I find just out and about.
Oh, yes. Because you find money everywhere. And I think it's, you know, I think of you every time. Like when I saw some in the, you know, airport stall, the pennies in front of the toilet. And I'm like, I know Sarah Bowen Shea would pick these up. I'm like, I'm not touching that. and what did you say? I sure would.
Oh, I know. And then Lisa Peterson chimes in. She's like, I would just wash it.
Oh no, Molly, would you pick those up?
Oh heck yeah.
Oh my god, no, y'all, that's where I draw the line. So
well can I tell you also, so you bring up my theory that I had, which is if you run past a penny and don't pick it up, then you're not gonna find any more change. And so but then it turns out that my best friend, who is not a runner, she lives in Brooklyn, and she's very funny and somewhat offbeat, and so she and her daughter were out visiting. And my friend's name is Chalkley. And Chalkley and I were going somewhere, and I found a dime. And she yells out, ooh, dimes are the turtles of change. And I'm like, okay. But I know exactly what she meant, which is that it must be that people think that turtles are harbingers of money coming into your life. And so she has a theory that when you find a dime, it's more money coming into your life.
So there is meaning. So this is good. There's greater meaning. And so that, you know, what I think is funny too is that, you know, on this whole quest last year, I had decided, you know, kind of amping up my ultra game. And I had really kind of been thinking that, gosh, I really,
you know, I have 70, I wanted to do 75 miles and I was thinking, you know, I really want to do 100, but I don't want to commit to it yet, but I'm thinking about it. So I changed my Twitter handle from Marathoning Mom to Boxer Runner 100. And that was my like subliminal goal to think, to keep it out there that I'd be ready one day to do that. Mm-hmm. Well, I did that and literally 3 days later, I was out running and I found, once again, me coming up empty, a quarter of a $100 bill. Now,
My goodness.
A quarter. So it is still yet to be decided if it's real. Everybody's like, it's a serial number on it, take it to the bank. I'm like, I don't care. It's a sign from the running gods. So on that same run home, when I found this $100 bill, I was elated. My neighbor's boxers had gotten out, and I do boxer rescue,
You need to tell people you mean boxers like dogs, not like Rocky like Balboa dogs, yeah. And yeah, boxers, Muhammad Ali.
Boxers, they have a boxer and a Weimaraner, and they had gotten loose and they're notorious for running the neighborhood. And on my way home, I gathered them up and got them safely back in their fence. So I felt like this was some type of karma that during the 6 mile run, I found the quarter of a $100 bill and I rescued dogs. So I'm sure that it's a sign from the running gods. It was the stamp of approval on my new goal of seeking 100 miles.
I'd say so. Yeah. Those are very good omens. Yeah.
Yeah. So
why do you think you don't find more, Jennifer?
I don't know. So I'm pretty dry right now. My guess with the other ladies you've talked to today, I'm a total of 12 cents.
Oh, for the year?
Yeah.
For the year?
Yes. I mean, this time last year I had reached my goal. But I think like Sarah says, is once you focus on it, you find it.
All right. It seemed especially fitting to wrap up these two best of episodes with a snippet from episode 253, which was Amiversary. AMR co-founders Serendipity celebrate 7 years. And I have to say, we are coming up on 8 years a little bit later this month. And this is us talking about our retreats and all the amazing places we've gotten to visit on our AMR travels. Take a listen. Shortly after the launch of Tales from Another Mother Runner, we held our first ever Run Plus Refresh retreat, which was in lovely Little Rock, Arkansas. And I do want to take a quick detour at this moment to say that when I think of Little Rock, I think of all the amazing places that we got to visit because of Another Mother Runner. And that sometimes I wish we were based in Europe, because then I'd be getting to go to, you know, Amsterdam and Paris and, you know, Stockholm. But
you know, never say never, right? There's talk of an Australian retreat, you know, that's kind of floating. That's on the easel. It's been really fun. I mean, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, it gets... I know you tend to be able to appreciate it more. Sometimes it gets a little lost on me just because I'm like strip mall after strip mall after strip mall.
Of course, I noticed the architecture.
You do artists. Yes, you love the bricks. You love the...
Birds of prey.
You had in Chicago about the flowers.
Oh, yeah. They really like their... Was it impatience or was it...
Daffodil. I don't remember.
That's so funny. Yeah.
Yeah, they do, Sarah. These Chicagoans really love their XX brand of flower, style of flower.
Right.
So funny. Yeah. No, it's been really fun. I mean, I do remember Little Rock. People are like, why are you going to Little Rock? And I'm like, well, because it's in the center of the country and, you know, it would work out well for us. But I mean, it was fun. It was definitely an interesting area of the country to visit, for sure.
Oh my gosh. I was just like, oh, we're going to Little Rock. And I got there. I mean, what an amazing, charming city. And like, I think about so many places that we visited like that. I mean, Spokane, you know, which is where we have our retreat now, and Kansas City. I mean, I fell in love with Kansas City and that mall that has Moorish influence architecture, didn't they?
Okay, you know the architecture. You know what I remember about that? Because we were going on TV that morning for like 4 seconds.
Yeah.
And I forgot all my makeup. And I remember I had to go get to the MAC store and drop like $150 on new makeup.
Oh my gosh.
I remember getting down there and I forgot a belt too. I mean, I remember the...
You remember things you forgot. there's some larger meaning in there, Timothy.
Yes, exactly.
I remember the architecture and the great meals and the, you know, Oh my gosh, that's so funny. And I mean, Twin Cities. I mean, when we went to the Twin Cities in 2011, and there was that funny nut log roll picture that from yesterday.
It's salted. It's salted nut roll, not the nut log, Sarah. Yeah,
salted nut roll. And when we went to the Twin Cities for the first time, I just was like, why did no one ever just tell me you've got to go to the Twin Cities? I mean, immediately I was like, okay, how can I come back here again? I need to visit the Twin Cities again.
Yeah, I knew how great the Twin Cities were.
You sure did. But you were keeping it from me. And but then same thing with Little Rock. When we were brought there by the people who own Capitol Hotel, and because they had us speak with Bart Yasso was also speaking there.
Are you sure? Bart's everywhere.
Yeah. But they brought us in, and then, you know, we sold at Little Rock Marathon, and just, I mean, I just fell in love with that place, and Capitol Hotel was so amazing. And so anyway, so it was our first retreat. And we such fun to get people together for, you know, days on end. So it wasn't just jammed into, you know, trying to make little piecemeal conversations in a 2-hour party. I mean, that was really to have the luxury of time and miles and meals with people. That was really so rewarding. Thanks again for joining me for this best of show. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you laughed. And I suspect maybe had a couple tears. I so look forward to another 100. I think I'll take notes now about my favorite snippets, so then this task will be a little easier next time. But thank you all so much for listening, for being a part of this amazing community of women runners. 8 years ago when Dim and I started this, we didn't know what we were starting, literally. And, we never could have dreamed it would be so wonderful. So thank you for being a part of, and taking us along on the ride. Many happy miles.